Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm calling you from the bottom of a well.
You actually sound totally normal to me, so I wouldn't know.
Well, I have no internet, and I haven't had internet since yesterday morning. And as I told my daughter yesterday afternoon, we might as well be living in a cardboard box. There is like this feeling of like all the things you expect that you've got set up in your life just unraveled when the internet stops working. It's amazing how many different things require the internet. Fortunately, we have phones that can connect to the internet. That is the only way that I've been able to like do my job the last day.
I was going to ask if you have... So you have some smart home stuff. Is your LAN working? So like your lights work and stuff?
My LAN is working. And so my lights are working. I was a little concerned about that. So my lights are working and all of the stuff that's based internally, like on internal timers and things like that, those all work. The stuff that requires an internet connection, requires to pull data down from somewhere else, those don't work.
Right.
I realized that my new little, the Lemetric Time thing that I've got it set to use, it's hitting a host name instead of an IP address. And if I had it hitting the IP, because it's hitting my web, my local server, if I had it hitting the IP, it would still be working. But it's hitting, it's trying to resolve the domain name for the server and failing. So it's dead too. But yeah, there's, you know, Jamie wants to like watch Netflix and it's like, no, you can't watch it. You can't. And nope, so she ended up watching, they were watching things on the Plex server.
Yeah,
basically.
I was gonna say, you still got the Plex server, so you can do that.
That's right.
But that's limited. I mean, you know, that's the era you and I grew up in.
I know, right? Well, I got out some DVDs. I said you could play these on the Xbox. Like, here's the Arrested Development DVDs. And she's just like, that's not going to happen, right? But they did end up out of desperation. We had to go to a school thing. And we came back and she was watching stuff on the Apple TV on Plex. So she made it work because that was the only way she was going to get entertainment. I did have a moment where... Julian was like, I can't do my homework. And he was not unhappy about it. Like, I felt like he was just trying to get away with not doing his homework. And I tethered him to my phone and said, here you go, do your homework. So thank goodness for tethering and for phones and cellular iPads. And that's how we've kind of made it work. The guy, Mr. Xavier Finity, is coming later today. And hopefully he will heal my... he will heal my router, which is, I think more, if I had to put money on it, it would be that he's going to replace my cable modem because I think, because it says that it's working, but, the lady on the other end, it's sporadic is what's happening. It'll all look like it's working and then the internet will drop and then like all the lights look like they're working and then some of them will start blinking for a while and then they'll come back. And so I think there's something just intermittently wrong and literally nothing changed between Wednesday night and Thursday morning. So I suspect that something just has gone bad in the configuration or hardware of the cable modem because everything else is pretty new. My router is only like a month old and it's all been working fine up to now. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yep, we rely on it. And instead, I am talking to you via I'm tethering my iPhone via Lightning to my iMac, and that's what I'm doing.
I like the idea of running your entire, you know, iMac Pro off of an iPhone's internet connection. It feels like pulling your Lamborghini and a horse and buggy.
Actually, you know, for most of the time, I'm not using the tethering because I don't want to kill the data on my phone plan. But
sure.
One of the things Comcast has is they ship all of their routers with a provisioned public Wi-Fi
yes.
turned on.
Yes.
And it's provisioned.
I've used this.
People, it bothers some people. Like, what do you mean other people are using my bandwidth? But my understanding is, you know, your bandwidth is provisioned. They give you as much bandwidth as I mean, yeah, if there's a busy time on the network, then everybody's trying to use it. But for the most part, your bandwidth is provisioned by whatever you're paying, whatever rate you're paying.
Right.
And then separately, the public Wi-Fi also has its provision that it's given, which is not particularly fast, but it's there. And any one of your fellow Comcast subscribers can go anywhere. And the idea is that basically they're all over the place. And when you're desperate for Wi-Fi, and you see it, you're like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, AT&T Wi-Fi, Xfinity Wi-Fi. It's like, oh, I'm subscribers to those. I can get on those networks. And one of my neighbors, I'm not sure which one, I think it's maybe my back fence neighbor, but one of my neighbors has that on. And so for most of yesterday and most of today, I've actually been connected via Wi-Fi to one of my neighbor's public networks, which is super slow, but it does work. And it means that I'm not like tethering all the time. But when I want to do a Skype conversation or upload a file, I gotta tether for that because it's just not, it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah. I use that when I'm out at coffee shop sometimes, or even just, you know, out for some reason, because I'll pick up the Wi-Fi network. But I think I don't have this because I have my own router and my own cable modem. So I don't think that there's any way to use that, since I invested in my own cable modem.
It turns out we are now out of contract for Comcast, which I'm not going to switch to anything else, but it means that it's time for that conversation about what services I want and what deal they can, you know, again, yes, I'll make a deal with you and lock into your services for a year, but you need to, you know, what's the best deal and all of that. And, you know, they always want to have you keep the phone. So we still have our landline number that we've had since we moved into this house, and now it's on the cable. And you try to get rid of it, and they're like, no, we want you to keep that, and we'll make a deal. Well, how about we give you Showtime and you keep the phone? I mean, they keep trying. I have to think that maybe there's some sort of like regulatory benefit that they get. There's some benefit they get that makes them want to give you the phone service, you know, really badly, because I really don't want it. The only reason we have it is that essentially it's, you know, it was a better deal to keep it than not.
Right.
But I will say one of the hidden things about it is I can't use their digital phone thing with a router I buy myself. As far as I can tell, that is you need to have their hardware to do the phone routing. So, and that's also provisioned IP. That's also over IP, but provisioned separate from your speed. And my phone line is working, by the way, or at least sporadically working, which is another part of the frustration of this. The TV is fine, and this is just the internet isn't working. So, I need to do that, and maybe I'll get rid of that if I can get rid of the landline. If I can get a deal where I can do that, then I could buy a router. I could buy my own, and it would be awfully nice as a computer nerd control freak. It'd be awfully nice to have a thing that I could set the configuration on, because for now, like I've got my own Wi-Fi network. I've got my own router that I bought, and then there's the cable modem, and it's a black box. Like, I don't talk to it. I can't configure it. I don't know what it's doing. In this situation, it's like, hey, send a guy out in a truck, because I literally cannot troubleshoot this thing, because it is meant to be not understandable by anybody who is, you know, might monkey with it.
Even having had my own cable modem for years, like, there's still not a lot of troubleshooting that you can do, but sometimes it helps for diagnosis purposes to be like, oh yeah, the cable modem is clearly the thing that is not working here. I gave up years ago on the package thing and all trying to negotiate the special deals because I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I eventually settled down and was like, give me your internet. I will not lease a cable modem for you. I don't care for any special. Just give me the internet.
Yeah,
and I know it might be cheaper a little bit, but I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, and we don't have, I mean, we still have traditional TV service that we're not going to give up. I'm not at the point where I'm willing to do that. I to go to what is going to be a degraded experience from what I've got now. I feel like they're close, but they're not there yet. So, and I'm happy with my TiVo interface. I think it's great. So I just, you know, but again, it's going to be like, and now you have this whole issue of like, what are they charging me for HBO versus what HBO Now is? Like, because I could just get HBO Now if they're not, and they're competing with that, and they know it. And I think the truth is, when you're bundling a bunch of things together from your cable company, like, they're going to make it cheaper than you could get buying them separately. Right. That's part of the deal.
Advantage.
But I still have to then figure out, like, what do I want and what do I not want and what are they willing to give me? And it's a pain. You're right. It's a colossal pain. I would much rather... And here's the thing that really bothers me about this. And you know, if your cable company doesn't do this or your internet provider doesn't do this, great. But for me, one of the problems with Comcast is, and it was the same way more or less with DirecTV when I had that, is you can't go to their website and shop for for products, right? Like, it's impossible. You can't do it. You can't, you as a subscriber, I can't look and see, like, itemize, like, what I'm paying for, because it's not, it's some weird package that is and there's always a set of weird packages, but I can't, like, go to their website and sort of price out, okay, this costs this and this costs this. And if I want this, you know, and maybe if you're lucky, they'll have kind of like gross tiers of it, but no details. And with Comcast, my you know, the way that I've basically been dealing with it is you basically don't know. You just have to call and talk to somebody, a salesperson who's going to try to sell you things. And it's super infuriating because I would much rather do it all self-service and just have no trouble with it and say, here are the things I want. Here are your offers. I want that level. And you just can't do it. You can't do it. And
even
if I want
the
faster
cell phone even the cell phone providers have gotten better about this.
Yeah. If I want faster internet, I also couldn't, which I did at one point, I couldn't, like, upgrade that on their site and say, like, what are the different levels of speed you offer and the different prices that I will have to increase my bill in order to get that? Nope, you can't do it. Just can't do it. And it's terrible. I get why they do it. It's the same reason why they make you call to cancel things, is because people won't bother. And I'm right now, because we just got off of the contract, we're on the monthly rate, which means presumably we're spending, like, way more money than we should every month because we haven't bothered to go back in and talk to them again. And that's super annoying. It's very frustrating. But here's the thing. I have no alternatives. Mm-hmm. So I have alternatives for television, although I'm not I used to have one of those alternatives, and I've decided it's not worth it, especially since the bundle does actually save you money. But I have no alternatives for fast internet. So unless those, it's possible that we saw somebody laying or putting fiber up, stringing fiber up on the telephone poles on our street the other week. It's possible that we might have, like, AT&T. Like UVerse fiber or something in our neighborhood soon. And if so, then that'll be interesting because that'll be some legitimate competition with Comcast for fast internet. But right now I have no choice. Like, I'm a captive of Comcast in terms of internet speed. I literally have no other choice. I used to have DSL. Right. It's way too slow and also not cheap and it's terrible. And I used to have DirecTV, which is fine. But again, you know, putting the two together, it was, you know, once I was on Comcast for fast internet, it was actually way cheaper and easier to get Comcast for TV too, because that's how they get you. So it's super frustrating. I wish there was competition. I wish there was better customer service, but nope.
Yeah, we actually have two cable companies in town, but it's one of those weird things where, you know, the next town over, which is, you know, a mile away, doesn't, you know, because it's very specific in terms of, like, what businesses are allowed in what places. Like, we don't have Fios, though it is available in other places nearby. But we do have a second cable company, which is not available in a bunch of other cities nearby. And it's, like, just bizarre regulatory, you know, and political hurdles.
Yep. It's
at
it's
least
dumb.
We have options.
It's dumb. It's dumb. So yeah, I hope my internet works soon. And then when that's done, I'll call Comcast and spend an hour on the phone with them negotiating whatever our new plan is going to be. So
yeah, that was just, I was just always trying to optimize with not having to go on the phone with anybody. That was my long play. And you know what? It's worked out okay so far. I bet I could have faster internet, but I'm also paying a price I'm comfortable with. And I have Comcast's super weird little streaming TV service, which I have no idea why I still get this, but it's such a good deal that I've like not said anything about it. I'm just gonna like sit here. I'm gonna shut up. I'm gonna enjoy the fact that I get HBO for basically $5 a month less than it would actually cost if I went out and bought it. Why? I don't know, but that's what I have.
Yeah.
The ways are mysterious. Technology. It's great.
Yeah. But what you gonna do, right?
Not have the internet?
I don't think so.
I'm not quite ready to cut the landline and go to an entirely mobile wireless lifestyle.
Well, let me tell you, my wireless here is not super stable. Like, it's LTE sometimes and it's 4G other times.
Same here, yeah.
And it's sometimes okay and sometimes not. And, you know, and then of course my bandwidth cap on that is like, which I will blow out this month because of these 2 days of trying to use it for other things. It's like 10 gigabytes or something, and I use a terabyte a month, more than a terabyte a month on my cable, so forget it.
Economies of scale.
Yeah. I just checked. AT&T says they don't have fiber here yet. Someday.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe they will.
Not yet.
Maybe your ship will come in.
I don't know. Maybe it was something else that they were putting on the wires, but I was kind of hopeful that maybe that was what it was. Who knows? Yeah, so what else is going on? What else is going on this week, Dan? Tell me what things are like on the internet.
It's been a little quiet this week. Not too much going on. One of the things I did notice was that there's been a lot more speculation of an iPhone SE 2, including a story today suggesting that the SE 2 might show up, but without a headphone jack. Ooh.
Oh.
So if you've decided, I want that old iPhone because it's got a headphone jack, you may be out of luck.
You can't escape. I would really like to see the SE get revised.
Yeah, I think so too. And I would be kind of surprised if they didn't do it. I mean, there's been a lot of rumors about it in the last 6 months or so, to the point where it starts to feel like it takes on a little bit of substance just because of the sheer volume. But, you know, I don't think it's a product that Apple is feeling super tied to a timetable for, or like, we have to get this out in a particular moment or whatever. I think it's nice for them to have, and if they have an opportunity where it's like, yeah, this seems like a good place for it, like, then they will make it happen. But if it doesn't seem like it's actually something they're that interested in, I don't think they feel any obligation to keep updating it.
Yeah, they'll do it when they want, but I think it is part of their strategy to have that like kind of low cost phone, and that's the one that is fitting in that strategy. So
yeah,
well, I hope it happens. I wrote a whole piece somewhere, Tom's Guide maybe, about like the case for the iPhone SE update. So I do hope that happens, because, you know, I like to be right, but I also like I like that model. I liked that it exists, because remember there was that great debate of if they would ever update that old size. And now here we are. It would be awfully nice if it actually happened.
One of the things that I think is interesting about it is a question of like, well, when would you release a new SE? Because it doesn't feel like a WWDC product, certainly.
Yeah, I think whenever. I think that's a press release product, honestly.
I agree. But it's always interesting to see when they choose to stagger it compared to, say, you know, its normal iPhone announcements, right? We know when the normal iPhone announcements tend to come. They tend to be in September. Do you want to release an SE at the same time? Do you want to release an SE slightly before? Slightly before it seems, you know, weird, like in too close proximity. Maybe just after it, I don't know. Or maybe you just want to issue a press release when you're talking about all the other iPhones on stage. There's a little bit of science to it.
A little bit. Well, what else is happening on the internet?
What else is happening on the internet?
Anything?
It's Earth Day this week.
Oh boy. Okay.
Lots of Apple environmental stuff. They've got a new robot that takes apart iPhones based on the one that they showed last year. Greenpeace is ticked off that Apple products aren't more easy to repair, which goes in great concert with that YouTube video that was making the rounds this week about a guy who couldn't get his iMac Pro fixed.
Yeah, people aren't going to like what I think about that video, because what I think about that video is that guy is an attention hound, and that Apple is well within its rights to tell him, no, we're not fixing the computer you bought and then took apart and broke things on, because you violated your warranty. Now, the one thing I will say is, yes, people should have spare parts. Independent repair dealerships should be able to get spare parts, and they should be able to order those spare parts from Apple and get them and make, you know, and say, yes, we will try to fix that. Or if he wanted to try to fix it himself. I actually am. I'm okay with that. But I'm also not okay with the idea that the manufacturer of the product, when you take it apart and violate the warranty, has some sort of responsibility. Now, what I would have done, or what I would have encouraged Apple to do, is say, basically, it's totaled. We'll fix it for you for a price that is so high above the list price that you're better off just buying a new one, rather than just saying, we refuse to fix this product. But I think same diff, quite honestly. Like, beyond a certain point, it's like, you took this thing apart and broke it, and it's going to be a fortune for us to try and put it back together again, or, you know, to take the parts off that you broke and all that. It's just like, I have very little, it's a guy who wants people to talk about him. And I've not said a lot about it because I don't want to talk about him. I don't want to give him that attention that he so clearly wants. Also, like, that video starts off with a guy like messing around with the screen, and there's a spark and stuff, which is totally a fake special effects spark and all. Is it a joke? What's going on? Like, I find the whole thing really distasteful. And the when I said people aren't going to like this is the part that you should be really mad at me now, I guess. Some people maybe, but you know, in the end, I just have no sympathy for this guy because he did this. It's a stunt, and he took it apart. And bottom line, you break it, you bought it. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I even went so far as to even look at the video. I kind of just skimmed through it online and saw a lot of people arguing about it. But my assessment was basically what you've described here, which is what it sounds like is they just, you know, kind of, if not carelessly, at least just sort of, recklessly took it apart. And now they're paying the price. I don't know. I can't feel myself getting worked up about this one way or the other. Just sort of roll my eyes at like another stupid publicity stunt.
The only level of worked upness that I can get is just rolling my eyes, because it is absolutely a publicity stunt. Let's make a gate around Apple, and this will be like iMac Pro repair gate, and we'll become, you know, a cause celeb here briefly, and people will pay attention to us. And I'm not saying that they purposefully broke it in order to make that video, although I wouldn't put it past them, but I would say that, you know, they saw it as an opportunity to get noticed. And again, should people be able to repair their own computers or get a certified technician to get parts and repair the computer for them? Yes. I think the one question here is the repair shop that they tried to use or whatever, you know, are they not certified? Did they not do the training to get those parts or whatever? Or is Apple like not yet at the point where it's providing parts? Because if Apple is hoarding all the parts and saying nobody can do service on this computer but us, then they need to give him a better answer than we decline service on this. Even if it is literally that $5,000 computer you bought, we will repair it for $7,000. Do you want to proceed, or do you want to just buy a new computer? Which would make people mad, but like, I feel, again, is well within their rights to do that. And as for the larger like Greenpeace picture, which is also the iFixit picture, it's like, on one level, I agree that in general, computers and phones and stuff should be considered non-disposable. So here's an example. My wife's got a Series 0 Apple Watch. Still works fine. We're not going to buy a new one for her. She doesn't want a new one, but the battery is dying. What are we going to do? We're going to pay $75 and put a new battery in it. We're not going to throw it away and buy a new one. We're going to pay $75 and put a new battery in it. Now, I'd like that to be cheaper, but what I do like is the idea that we can do that. And I think that's good. I think that's what people should be doing. The disposability of tech bothers me. At the same time, a lot of the reason that stuff gets miniaturized and you don't have modules that you can swap in and that makes it really hard to repair things is because people want thin, light, super whizzy gadgets. And to make those the thinnest, lightest, and whizziest, you make engineering decisions, if you're Apple, that leave repairability aside, because you've got to, you know, you are trying to make the end product and not something that a hobbyist can break open.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's tricky because there's so much, the volume of gadgets that seem disposable is so high. And certainly there is a vibrant resale market for a lot of those. So that's, you know, that cuts into that a little bit. But, you know, and I don't want to be too much in the sense of, you know, I even remember my dad like complaining about things that, you know, he couldn't fix when I was a kid, and it was just the only answer was to go out and replace them. I mean, this has been a trend over the last 50 years. And, you know, there is some truth to things like they don't make them like they used to. My mother is still using like their original washing machine from like 1980 because it's just robust, right? Like it was a tank. It's not like fancy. It doesn't have a lot of features, but that means it's easy to fix.
Yeah.
But even that, they're running out of parts on just because they aren't like the repair people can't necessarily fix them as well because they just aren't making parts for them anymore. But you know, at the same time, the fault that all that lies at to a certain extent our own feet for being, you know, consumerist people who are just going to go buy new things and covet the shiny new thing.
Well, I want those whizzy features and in some cases want a lower price. Like how can I get this refrigerator for cheaper? Well, we skimped on the parts and it's going to break in 10 years instead of the old one, which would last 20 years. You know, you could do the math and say, oh, I'd rather buy one refrigerator. I mean, first off, some people don't want a refrigerator for 20 years. They want them in 10 years refrigerators are going to be better. I want to buy a new one in 10 years. But the other thing is people are really bad at deferred gratification, right? You can spend more money by buying two refrigerators, or you can save money by buying one refrigerator over the long run, but it'll cost more up front, and people are like, oh, I want the cheaper one. That's just, people are like that, and it's a tough thing. And speaking of publicity stunts, the other thing I'll say is Apple's a big target. And so one of the things that really bugs me is when people target Apple because Apple is a big target, even though it's a systemic, endemic problem. Like the problem in e-waste is a problem for everybody who makes smartphones, tablets, computers. It's a problem. It's not a problem for one company. It's a problem for all the companies. In fact, Apple is, by a lot of accounts, one of the best behaved in this area. But still, the fact is that we have a problem where lots of technology stuff that is still probably usable just gets disposed of. And then there are all sorts of fallouts from that. We have a guy here in the county where I live who has made it his mission to recycle tech stuff. And, you know, some of it ends up in the pure recycling chain. But he does a whole lot of refurb. Like you take him an old iMac and he's going to get it up and running, and he's got a chain of, you know, people that he can donate those things to, like schools and community centers and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's great because a lot of these things, I think, are just like put in the land. They're used for a year and a half or 2 years, and then they're put in the landfill, and that is wasteful. They do have a life beyond that, and I think you know, that's a bigger story than any one particular company, because this is about all of us, and it's about human nature, and it's about miniaturization and customization. You know, it's better to build that one system on a chip, but that means that now you've got an impenetrable black box that can't be fixed. It needs to just be thrown away and replaced. That's tough, but that's also the benefit, is the reason that it happens. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the price that we pay. I mean, and to a certain extent, some stuff that lasts really long outlives some of its, you know, second life usefulness. When I bought my iMac last year, I replaced a 2011 iMac, and it was fine. And traditionally in the past, I've oftentimes traded those computers to, or just given them to like family members or stuff like that. I couldn't find anybody who had a computer that wasn't already better than that.
Yeah.
And it's not that it wouldn't have functioned fine in some places, but even, you know, schools and stuff have limitations on how old they want to take things because what software it works with, etc. Mine had like a line up the display, so you probably would have wanted to redo the display panel at least, you know, all that. And it's like, at the end of the day, you know, we do at least have the virtue of things like the MIT like swap market over here too, which is like a place people sell old tech and vintage tech for, you know, hobby purposes. But you know, I think I just trying to remember the other day what I did with it, because I was thinking about this. And I said, I think I just took it back to the Apple store and was like, here you go, because they'll just take it and they'll break it down and recycle it. And it's like, again, they're doing the best they can, but you know, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, yeah, and that's I'll take it to the guy, and he'll hopefully find a place. And I know that if he doesn't find a place for it, he will do something else with the parts, or whether, you know, and he'll put it in the traditional kind of recycling chain if he needs to. But he will try a lot of other things first, including, you know, if it's broken, which mine isn't, but like using parts to repair other devices and things like that. Also, I feel like, you know, if you've got the storage space, you should squirrel away some of these Apple products, because, you know, then I see people selling old Apple products on eBay. Like, you just have to wait, and then that G4 Cube, you'll be able to sell that in 15 years for $400 or whatever.
Yeah, you gotta ride the curve there.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's just a big issue, but I actually think that those guys do it a disservice by their stunt of, like, you know, we disassembled something and voided the warranty for a YouTube video and are now really bent out of shape because Apple wouldn't fix it for us. Like, come on, grow up, forget it. So, yes, this is I have zero sympathy for those people. And I this is why I'm not even talking about it, because I just don't even want to get an argument about it. Because, quite frankly, I don't want to spend time thinking about it. I don't want to watch that video and, like, Zapruder-like analyze it and try to figure out what they added and what's real and what, you know, what do I then have to do research about who they contacted to in order to repair it and all that. It's like, I could tell immediately that it was somebody who was just starved for attention, and I just kind of don't want to go there. But, you know, I do agree, like, it's important to have repair options. I've used third party, you know, repair options. When I had a problem with my old iMac, not the 2009 one that I had a while back, and I had a local guy just down in San Rafael took it apart and put in a new hard drive and the whole thing. And it was like, you know, that's kind of harrowing to break open an iMac. But I went to the professionals, and I thought that was great. And I got way more life out of that computer because of that. And I'm a big supporter of that. And, you know, I do think Apple has some responsibilities to allow those things to occur. Sure. But there is a point where Apple, I think, rightly should draw the line and say, no, we're not going to fix this thing that you, there's got to be a line somewhere, right? If you stick it into a blender and turn it into dust, can you walk the dust back to the Apple store and say, please fix this? Like, at some point, it's gone too far. Anyway, I don't know. I'm cranky. I have no internet. I can't watch the video now, Dan, because have you tried to watch? Oh, they can't. I can't. I press play on things and nothing happens. I'm like, oh, right.
You know, I'm glad to see you're making it through by the light of your tallow candle.
It's, oh boy, a cardboard belt. I'm wearing a cardboard belt. That's a reference to a movie that I can't stream. Oh, well.
Oh, this is truly, truly great suffering here.
You know who I do love is the people who support Six Colors. That's who I love. There's a lot of good stuff this week. I mean, for a week where not a lot of, like, super exciting stuff happened, there was a lot of interesting stuff on Six Colors, right? Like, that was kind of cool.
I think so. Maybe I'm biased.
You know, machine learning, a link. I got to talk about the war on buttons again, which I always like. Mm-hmm. I got Classic. To talk about clicky keyboards. You know, there's some good stuff there. I you know, John Gruber asked me about keyboards. I think, I know I got John Gruber to buy one of these Matthias Laptop Pro Bluetooth keyboards, which, mm-hmm. you know, he it's going to be very hard for him to ever give up his Apple Extended 2, the aircraft carrier
right,
keyboard.
Sure.
But I got him to get one, and I think he's going to try it. And I think he will like it better than the other keyboards he's tried in terms of trying to find an analog for the feel of the Apple Extended, because it, having brought out like 5 keyboards that I have in my house and trying them all, I feel like it's the closest, because somebody who's a super keyboard nerd told me it's because they've got dampeners in that one that they don't have in their Tactile Pro, and the Apple Extended has dampeners too. And that's why that they actually kind of sound and feel similar, because somebody else was like, well, actually it's the Tactile Pro that sounds the most like the Apple Extended and not the Laptop Pro, which is quieter. And I had to write that guy back and say, I'm sorry, I got them all here. It's not true. this one is super loud and clicky, where you can actually feel the resistance when the switch pops over. And the Laptop Pro is like more muffled, and at least my Apple Extended, maybe my Apple Extended 2 is so beaten down over the years that it doesn't sound anything like it used to. But how it feels now and sounds now is very close to that Matthias one. And apparently a lot of people follow John Gruber. Who knew? Because apparently Matthias is now sold out of that. And what Gruber did is he ordered it before he tweeted about it and before he wrote about it, so that he could get in before everybody else bought them, apparently. Yeah. Anyway, keyboards, they're a thing. And I did write a little thing about how I write on my iPad at the bar in my kitchen, which is fun. I've got a really cool stand that I link to in the story that makes your iPad like kind of like an iMac. It's like an iMac foot and a little grippy, you know, hingy thing. But it's pretty great. And I write a lot of stuff at the bar on iPad. It's great.
Yeah, no, I'm not nearly as into keyboards, and my wallet is very thankful about that.
Yeah, it's oh man, I spent way too much time staring at keycap sets again the other day, and I had a moment where I was like, wow, this looks really good, and then I saw it was like, cost more than my keyboard to get new keycaps, pretty keycaps for it, and I was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I like pretty keycaps, but...
Oh, yeah, I get the temptation of the, like, oh, I want to have this thing, and it's customizable, I can tweak it, I can play with it, but, like...
And I don't look at the keycaps, that's the thing, is, like, pretty yes. colors on the keycaps are nice, but I almost never look down at my keyboard. I do it all by feel, which is why the key layouts yep. are important, and I want it to feel good, and I want it to sound good, but as much as the pretty keycaps are pretty, I literally don't look down, so...
But it's one of those things, though. I understand the getting the itch to like customize and tweak. I mean, this past week, one of the projects I set myself to was I took my third whack at getting a streaming audio server installed on my Linode server, which is basically setting up Icecast, which we use to stream stuff for The Incomparable, and Relay uses to stream stuff as well. And I had taken a couple shots at it before, and I kept running into like these weird, you know, just frustrations because it's Linux and it's not my wheelhouse. I know just enough to be dangerous. And I kept like, you know, I would spend a couple hours on it, and then I would bang my head against a wall, and I would go and do something else. And so I finally came at it this time. I was like, this time I'm going to do it for sure. And I got distracted into some other totally unrelated problem. And I ended up hitting up our good community over at the Incomparable member Slack has a very active technology channel where there are lots of tech nerds who know lots of stuff that I do not know. And they actually ended up helping me fix this unrelated problem, which then ended up fixing my related problem somehow. I don't really know. But long story short, I actually got it working, but it was several hours of like, you know, trying command line things, doing research about like different utilities. How do you change the startup order of items in Ubuntu Linux, this particular version? And it was just like, it was both frustrating as hell and just the kind of problem that I can sink my teeth into and spend like hours at a time working. I look up, I'm like, oh my God, it's 4:30. Where the hell did the afternoon go?
Yep.
But I beat it.
Down the rabbit hole.
That's right.
Take that rabbit.
Down the rabbit hole.
All right. Well, another week gone by. I hope I have internet next week.
Good luck.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.